you know, I want women who have who are experiencing betrayal trauma to know that they are not alone and that there are communities of support out there. I think one of the reasons why I have made the recovery that I have, which very quick, honestly, on, you know, on the scale of normal recovery, it was because I got help from people who were trauma informed.
Welcome to the P Word podcast, brought to you by Naked Truth Project. We aim to open eyes and free lives from the damaging impact of porn. And this podcast is going to equip you to talk about and tackle pornography in your church and in your community. Hello and welcome to another episode of the P Word podcast. My name is Ian Henderson.
And I'm Kat Etherington.
And it's really good to have you with us for this episode. And actually, we're doing something a little bit different because we're just going to play one interview with a lady called Cindy, who Kat will introduce in a moment. And in this full interview, we're going to hear a little bit about the impact that porn has had on Cindy and her marriage and her life. But also, Cindy's going to share just the way in which the church has journeyed with her during that time and the impact that the church has had. And some of the kind of negative stuff's in there, but actually a lot of this story is just really positive. It's a story of how much of a difference the church can make to a relationship and to an individual. And so we thought this would be a great thing just to give that extra bit of time to. So Kat, tell us a little bit about who Cindy is.
Yeah, so you're going to meet Cindy Byema. She is our head of recovery, having previously been a client with us at the very, very beginning of our sort of partner work. And she has moved through our organization from client to a kind of support role and now is a really integral part of our community. What I love about this interview is Cindy's reflection that the very first time we ever had a conversation, part of what she was asking me was like, how Christian is this going to be? And approaching any resources that seem to be Christian in nature very tentatively. And so it's just a really cool story to hear how she started there. And she's now kind of right in the middle of the work that we do and supporting our clients from a sort of faith-based perspective where that's appropriate. And it's, yeah, so I love Cindy's story and journey with us.
So we hope you enjoy listening to this, and then we will be back to our normal format in the next episode.
Thank you for joining us. What I would love to just hear you reflect on to begin with is a little bit about your early experience of church. So did you grow up with church being a part of your life? What was your experience as a child?
Oh, that's such an interesting question and always an interesting one for me to answer because my parents came from varied backgrounds in terms of church. My mother was raised Roman Catholic and my father never really had a solid connection to church. But and that said, you know, we would visit churches all the time. And, you know, sometimes we would go to the Catholic church, sometimes a Baptist church. I went to a Mormon church for a while and, you know, just I think I was always open to the idea, and I feel like I've always had a connection to Christ, but the church never felt like home. It never felt comfortable. I don't know. It's, yeah, so yes and no. My mother always said, she said, I want you to make your own choice about whether you want to be part of a church or not and to choose what feels right for you. So that was great, and that was liberating and gave me a lot of freedom. But at the same time, I didn't grow up with that faith within our home life and always felt like there was something missing there.
So it sounds like you had some kind of spirituality, but that didn't have a home in any particular faith tradition or religion or indeed in any kind of a church. So how would you describe your relationship with Christianity? Is that different to your relationship with church in those early years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like I said, I think I've always identified as a Christian, but never felt at home in a church. And too often had just like little experiences that made me feel judged rather than accepted. And so it became, I got to a point where it's like I didn't trust the church, but I trusted God and I trust Jesus.
That's really interesting. And I, you know, flash forward a number of years, we met you when you joined one of our programs in the midst of your own experience of, I'll let you describe that, I suppose. But I would love to just hear kind of a little bit about how you came across Naked Truth Recovery, but also sort of where you felt like you were in your faith at that point in time.
Well, I came across Naked Truth Recovery and Wholehearted Program specifically because I was living in Europe at the time and I was looking for English language support in a time zone that was friendly for me. Mm. And of course, at that time, there was not nearly as much available to support partners as there is now. So that's how I found you. It was just a random Google search and just happened to join right as you were getting started. And I don't know if you remember, but I sent you an email that I really had some concerns about the fact that Wholehearted was part of a Christian ministry. And I didn't want to walk into a situation where I was going to be judged because I wasn't a official church member in any capacity at that time. And but you answered my questions very nicely and succinctly. You made me feel welcome and embraced. And that was a big part of, that was actually really the first step of me coming back into a relationship with the church specifically.
That's really interesting because what I take from what you're saying is that, you know, for people who maybe aren't sure exactly how they identify in their spirituality or their faith, who maybe feel like they've got a difficult relationship with God, approaching a Christian ministry for support can feel quite daunting and maybe even a little bit scary. So would you say more about what some of those barriers are for women who are maybe in a similar position to where you were when you were reaching out for help? What do you think they're afraid of when they reach out to the church or to any sort of organization that has a label on it that makes it Christian? What would you say are their barriers?
I think a lot of women, and I hear this in groups and in, you know, individual sessions on a regular basis now, a lot of women feel that people within the church don't hear their concerns. They feel like they're going to be judged, held responsible and accountable for their husband's behaviors. They just don't feel like they're listened to. And I think for myself, I also had those same concerns, a little bit different, but, didn't want to walk into a place where I felt I was going to be judged, where I felt like people weren't going to accept me for who I was right then and there. Right. And not say, oh, you don't fit into this box, so you don't belong here. So that was that was my concerns. And I think what I also hear mirrored in conversations with other partners.
Yeah, absolutely. And that really sort of reinforces the reason why, although we are a Christian organization, we've chosen to operate in a way that is inclusive of people who have a Christian faith or another faith or no faith at all, or are just figuring it out, because it's, you know, this is an important space to hold for people. So I gather then, since you've gone on to become such an integral part of our organization, so not only are you our program coordinator, but you also went on to train to support women in our groups and in a one-to-one capacity. So you obviously didn't find judgment in Wholehearted. Would you like to talk a little bit about what you did find with us in our program?
Oh, wow. I think the key was, I mean, yes, I think Christianity was a part of the conversations, but it was held in a very tender and open way. And really, I saw the expression of Christianity rather than the teaching of Christianity. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to me, that's what ministry really is. It's giving to people out of a sense of holding them where they're at, coming from a place of understanding, being willing to listen to them, And also the other aspect, of course, that's such a key part of the work that we do at Naked Truth Recovery is that it is informed. It's not just informed by Christianity. It is informed by understanding of betrayal trauma, by understanding of sex and porn addiction, by understanding how people are impacted by addiction, whether they're the person struggling with the addiction or they're the partner. So, you know, understanding all of that from a educated perspective, you know, psychological, the coaching, all of that is really, really important. You cannot support people from a place of faith only. I think that educational component is really, really important.
Yeah, so it sounds like what you're saying is that people showed up in a way that was incarnational. They showed up as Jesus in person to you, which is really a fundamental part of our philosophy as how we approach recovery. Is, you know, you can talk to people about who Jesus is all day long, but often what makes a really big difference is when you show up as the hands and feet of Jesus and you be that to another person. So it really makes me happy to hear you talk about that, but also you're highlighting the fact that often that's not enough by itself because of the specialized mm-hmm. nature of the kinds of issues that come along with sex and porn addiction and betrayal trauma. Having a balance of faithfulness and you know, that's really important as a starting place, but it needs to be balanced with that mm-hmm. neurological, psychological, sociological understanding of the issue on multiple fronts, right?
Absolutely.
Mm. So how did being a part of Wholehearted and in general your journey through your own experience of betrayal, how did that impact your faith?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think for my husband, and I think I need to say a little bit about him at this point, because he grew up in a family where there was no belief in God. His parents were atheists for multiple reasons. And while they celebrated Christian holidays, there was no God within it. It was just more of a societal celebration, cultural expression of that. And but when he began his own recovery journey, of course, part of the 12 steps is that relationship to a higher power, however you define that. And so he started to become open to the possibility of having a relationship with the church, however that looked like. And we were living abroad at the time. We found the only English language church in the city we were living in at that time. This was in Poland. And we thought, well, let's go. Let's try it out. And we did, and my husband started to have conversations with the pastor there. Now, this is a small community, very diverse, very international, but this pastor was an American. And this pastor was accepting of my husband. His wife was accepting of me. Not only that, he was vulnerable and open about his own struggles with pornography. And his wife was able to speak to me about her own experience of dealing with that. So we were able to come into a community where we were not only presented with finding a new and stronger relationship to Christianity, and it gave a venue for my husband to learn about that through Bible study, but it was also a community where we felt heard, where we weren't judged for what we were dealing with. We were actually embraced and held. They didn't come at us with, you know, well, you should do this or you should do that. You know, they understood. They really got it. And they actually provided a forum for us to speak to the congregation about our experience and about our struggles. And the pastor brought this into a sermon series that he was doing, which I believe was like on the teachings that King David gave to his sons kind of thing. So it was really embraced. You know, our experience was embraced, and we were able to find the support that we needed both for where we were at as a couple in dealing with sex addiction and betrayal trauma, but also as exploring a relationship to a deeper relationship, a more active relationship to Christianity through the church and within the church.
That's really cool and to hear, because we hear, of course, so many stories where it doesn't go down like that. And so it's always super encouraging to hear the stories of people who reach out to the church and have a really positive experience. But I guess what I would take from what you're sharing is that across the board, that fear and expectation of judgment needs to kind of be proved wrong for us to have a positive experience within the church. We hear this again in our groups and with our clients all the time, is that they're afraid to talk. They're afraid of the consequences of that. Throughout the course of this conference, we're going to hear stories of people, being removed from ministry because of the struggles that they're having, and not that I'm saying that there's not a time and a place for consequences and discipline and making sure that other people are safe. But actually what I'm hearing from you is that it's a much more human to human experience that makes the difference, that when I can not only not be judged, but I can be valued for the experience that I have. I can be, it can be assumed that I have something to give as a result of some of the things that I've been through. It almost gives that kind of purpose to our pain, which of course is such a huge part of the gospel message. I love hearing that, but also, and this backs up, someone within our Wholehearted community, as you know, recently did some research about the way the church responds to partners of pornography addicts. And a key piece of her findings was related to the experience that they have with their pastor when they reach out for help and support. And that, generally speaking, the more positively and empathetically the church leadership responds, the better overall experience these people have with their churches. And it sounds like your experience really sort of filtered down from the church leadership through the rest of the church. And I guess that makes sense. You know, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking about if people sort of hear about your experiences and your issues, if you like, through the church drums, the jungle drums, or the sort of the grapevine, so to speak, in a sort of disciplinary sense, then that lends itself to creating judgment across the congregation. Whereas if they see you being used within your brokenness by the leadership, they like it sets the tone for how the rest of the congregation respond to your experience too, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, here's the reality. This is a growing problem. You know, when we have statistics like over 50% of people within church leadership are using porn on a regular basis, and the general population, the numbers are very similar. This is a problem that is in every church. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to go away until we can start having open and honest conversations about it. And the young people, I mean, the numbers there are staggering, staggering. And you know, we get increasing numbers of people applying to our programs who are 20 and under. Of course, we have to refer them elsewhere if they're teenagers. But, this needs to be brought up in every area of community, but particularly within the church. I think there's so much power to heal.
Well, and it sounds like you have been exposed to a variety of churches. It sounds like you've accessed churches across the world with your travels. Did you ever hear anybody talk about porn or sex or healthy sexuality in all of those experiences of church that you had?
No. Only the one that when we were overseas, even the church that we are part of here in the United States now, they will sometimes bring up topics like this, but they're very gentle and I would say almost timid with it. And we'd love to help do something to change that.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about now you're back in the States and it's really established in your respective recoveries and your relationship recovery as well. Tell us a little bit about your relationship to the church and to Christianity now.
Yeah, well, we are both officially baptized now. And we are members of a church. It's a large church because we live in Texas and most churches are large in Texas. I think there's like over 10,000 members of this church. Doesn't feel that big. It's amazing. We are leaders of a small group. You know, we participate regularly and it's a very important part of our life here.
Would you ever have imagined when you were starting out on this journey that this would be a journey that would bring you kind of full circle and back into a deeper relationship with Jesus and a deeper relationship with each other and a deeper relationship with the church? I mean, I remember meeting with you very, very early on in your process, and I don't think I was looking at a woman who was believing for depth of relationship in all of those areas. But could you have imagined this playing out the way that it did?
No, absolutely not. And I feel like particularly my husband opening up to becoming a Christian, that had a significant part of his recovery journey, is still a significant part of his recovery journey. And the stronger that relationship grows for me with Jesus Christ, I really don't know how people do it alone. I really don't know how they do it, because you get to this point where you are so broken and that burden you carry is so heavy. And I can't tell you how many times I would sit in church and just cry, tears streaming down my face. Still happens. I get emotional at church. That's where it all comes out. But you know, we need to be held. We need to know that we're not on this journey alone. We need to know that when we are in our darkest pits of despair, that there is someone shining a light for us, leading us the way out. And to me, and I know for so many other women, that can be the church. And whether it's through a church organization or a ministry such as Naked Truth Recovery, you know, it's that actions that people stepping into that space with you, holding your grief, holding your pain, hearing you, validating you, understanding you, and, you know, just here, we can take one step this way. That's all that's really needed. But judgment, discipline, I mean, things like that, they just shut people down. Then they can't open their hearts to receiving the help that's needed.
And you know, as you talk about that, to me, that's such a picture of who Jesus is, that, you know, I am not a person that necessarily feels like I have all of my theology together on all of the big issues. But one of the principles that really guides me is just to imagine, when I'm thinking about how I might respond to a situation, I often ask myself, can I imagine Jesus doing that? Whatever it is, you know. So when I want to scream at my kids because they're driving me crazy, which I sometimes do, obviously, I'm like, can I imagine Jesus doing that? Is Jesus a God who screams at people? Is he a God who judges people within the depths of their pain? And so, you know, for me, that's a really helpful compass in terms of how I might choose to respond. And I really hear that in you when I'm asking myself, what do I imagine Jesus would do with a person who is completely in despair, like you said, completely in their darkest moments? What I don't imagine is that he would judge that person and point out all the places that they went wrong. There might be a time and a space for conversations about all of those things, but in the depths of my despair, probably isn't it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Down in the dirt with you.
Right. Yeah. I see the Jesus who kneels down beside dying children, who touches the faces of lepers. You know, that's in many ways those are symbols of the work that we do, which is what I was going to ask you about. So tell me and everybody else about how what you've been through, both in your own experience of addiction and betrayal and recovery from that, but also on this kind of lifelong experiment with the church that you've been involved with. How does that inform the way that you work with our clients now?
If I look back at my life, I really can see now that I have always worked with nonprofits in one way or another. I have experience working with children and students within a school that was a nonprofit organization. I worked as a photographer working with NGOs and you know, getting images and telling stories to promote their work. And then coming into Naked Truth, I just felt like this was bringing it to kind of like a full circle again. All of that work, whether it was of a spiritual nature, which there was definitely work of a spiritual nature, or just, you know, a pragmatic way of helping people and supporting people, hearing their stories, validating their experiences, that's always been a part of my life. Pretty early on in my recovery, I started to consider the idea of actually working within this field. It just felt like the right thing to do. I'm not sure I can say it was a calling, but I responded to something, right? Mm-hmm. And so started to consider, you know, doing trainings and started out by doing A Door of Hope with Donna Dixon. So I know she's going to be speaking at some point during the conference. And yeah, it just felt right. But I feel like all of the skills that I've learned in all of the work I've done through decades now is utilized by what I'm doing, working with individuals and working with groups. And really the key part is being able to, it's empathy, right? It's being able to be present with someone in their struggle, in their pain, to hear them and to see them. I mean, this is something I did in my work as a teacher. This is something I did with my work as a photographer. And it's definitely a key and important, crucial part of the work that I do now. Yeah, I don't know. I get very excited when people come to group or come to individual sessions, and I can see there's this moment of turning within them, right? There's that growth that's happening. And it's an integration with self. But to me, that's a reflection of their reconnecting to God, however they define it, or even if they don't define it that way. Because for me, that's where I meet God, is in my heart. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's
what it does. And as you were talking, a question kind of came up for me, which was, you know, you're talking about what it takes to sit with somebody in their pain. And I was thinking, that's easy, right? Ironically. And of course, we know that that is not an easy thing to do. And I guess I would be interested to hear your thoughts on what makes that so hard. And I think that's one of the reasons why churches really struggle with this issue, because the pain and the devastation that ripples out from the discovery of a secret sexual life, whatever that looks like, is often so raw and so messy. You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on why that's so difficult for anyone, I guess, but we're talking church particularly. Why is that so tough for people to hold?
Really good question. I think for one, we as a society, when there's a problem, we want to fix it. And it's not just as a society. I mean, if you're sitting, you know, if I'm sitting with one of my kids and they're in pain, it's like my automatic response is, okay, how can I fix the problem? And the thing is that is what we need to not do when we're dealing with people who are in trauma. They don't necessarily want us to fix it. They want us to hear them. And I think stepping away from that fixing it mode is really, really hard. We don't have the skills. And this is where I feel like it's really important for the church to be as informed as they can be about the issue with porn use and the issue with porn addiction and the issue of betrayal trauma and how it really breaks these women, mostly women. I mean, it's not only women. Let's be real here. And if you cannot have the information to help them and to support them, then try to find the resources where you can get that support. Walk with them through the journey. But if you need to bring in an expert, bring in an expert. There's lots of help out there. There are so many different resources that you can utilize and bring into the church or even, you know, refer them out. But be open to saying, I don't know. I don't know how to help you. I hear your pain. Let's see what we can do.
And I guess that's hard too, isn't it? And you know, most people who are in positions of leadership or pastoral oversight in churches are there because they love people. And they love people in some way as a reflection of the heart of God. And so, you know, they're not there because they want to harm people. And so as you're talking, I'm thinking that's a hard thing to do, isn't it? It's a hard thing to see somebody so broken and to have to say, I don't know what to do with that. And yet it sounds like, and I would agree with you if this is what you're saying, that sometimes the most loving thing to do is to admit that we don't know, and to not abandon somebody in the not knowing, you know, I don't know, so see you later, but to say, I don't know, let's see if we can find something together. Yeah, that's a hard thing to do when we have that tendency to want to fix.
Right. And sometimes an analogy I share with partners is, so imagine you've got a backyard and there's this giant boulder in your backyard and you have been trying to move it and budget, but you just can't. So you call over all of your friends and family to help you and your church and everybody comes, and it doesn't matter how hard they push on it, they cannot move this boulder because they do not have the right equipment. They do not have the right tools to be able to move this boulder. So instead, you need to call in somebody who's got a giant backhoe. You need to bring in somebody who's got the right equipment, who's got the right tools. They can help you to move that boulder. And then you do not damage your friends and family and church in the process. Retching your back is no fun. So, right? And I think that's important for everybody to know, not just the people who come to our programs, but for the church, for anybody who is in a place to sit with somebody who's been broken and impacted by these issues.
So what do you think you can and can't do? Right. And as you're using that analogy, I'm thinking, okay, so I'm a church leader and, you know, you come and sit in my office and tell me your story. And I go, okay, I don't have the right equipment to move this boulder. I'm going to make a call. I'm going to see if I can find some experts to help with this. What do you think is the church's role then on an ongoing basis? So maybe they refer their parishioners into us and they say, okay, I'm going to send you to Naked Truth Recovery. These guys really know what they're doing. You know, I guess as church, we still want to be community. We still want to be support. What do you see as the church's role once they've referred you on to the right kind of help?
I think they still have a very important role. I mean, the people who come to us, they still want to feel held within their community. So, you know, whether it's checking in on with people, you know, hey, how are you doing? Is there anything that we can do? You know, can we bring a meal? Are you, you know, are you in a place of really being broken down? How can we support you? Asking that question, how can we support you? How can we support you? But don't just, I think, you know, just referring on and then, all right, good, they're good. Everything good? Everything's good. Keep connection with people. I mean, they still want to be heard and held.
Yeah, that's really great advice, because we often hear that from, especially from those partners whose husbands don't choose recovery, you know, the porn widows out there. And they often tell the story that when so-and-so's husband died, there was a meal train, there were people out mowing the lawn for her, there were people running errands and collecting the kids and doing all of the stuff, and that's not happening for them. And they feel feel the intrinsic sense of judgment within that, that, well, you know, my relationship ended in some other way, and maybe they feel sensitive around the topic of divorce. And so, you know, just hearing you say that, it's like, there is a sense of we are going through a crisis that might look different than when somebody has a sick child or suffers an injury. But actually, there is a sense in which the individuals are injured, the relationship is injured, and they might really appreciate a casserole. They might really appreciate somebody to paint the front door. They might, you know, those practical offerings of support that we so often see jump into place when somebody has a baby or whatever it is within the church, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hear this from partners time and time again. I need practical support right now.
Yeah, because when you're in a trauma, actually just the day-to-day functioning of life is a real challenge, isn't it?
Yep, yeah. It is.
Well, thank you so much for what you've shared so far. I guess just sort of in closing, I would love to just hear your sort of ideas around, like, what is it that you would want a partner to know as they are experiencing whatever they're going through in the very early days? It sounds like, and I remember, you know, you and I connected very, very early in your journey, and we often reflected on what a huge difference that makes to sort of getting good support really early in the process can really set you up for success versus those people who perhaps have tried different things that have not been super helpful, or they haven't had very good support or any support, and how much more complicated that makes their experience. So what would you say to people who are just experiencing this as an issue for the first time?
Oh, wow. Very simple. I want women who are experiencing betrayal trauma to know that they are not alone and that there are communities of support out there. I think one of the reasons why I have made the recovery that I have, which very quick, honestly, on the scale of normal recovery, it was because I got help from people who were trauma informed. And so finding help, I'm going to plug APSATS here, which is the Association for Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists. The people who have that training not only understand betrayal trauma, but they're going to help walk you through a path of healing. And there are other people out there who know what they're doing, but that trauma-informed understanding that aspect, this is different from any other addiction. This is different, and working from a co-addict model isn't necessarily helpful for partners who've experienced this. So yeah, basics, there's support out there. Help, you know, find it, go to the APSATS website, and you are so not alone.
Yeah. And, you know, as you were talking about that, I was thinking, you know, some churches will be hearing that language, trauma informed, for the very first time. And, you know, when we're talking about being trauma informed, we're not saying you have to have a PhD in the neurobiology of trauma, right? No. We're saying that we have to understand the way that trauma can present. We're saying, you know, let's understand that hearing a particular worship song in church can be a trauma trigger for some people, and what that means and what that feels like. Just walking into a church can be tough. Understanding the sort of spiritual aspects of trauma and what it means to be in a Christian marriage when the secrets all come out, and all of those things, right? And so, you know, it doesn't have to be a degree level education, but a general awareness of what trauma looks like, how it gets activated after the event. Because I think it's Shelley Rambo, who's a theologian and a trauma specialist. She talks about trauma is the pain that doesn't go away straight away, and how as Christians we're very quick to want to jump from the death on Friday to the resurrection. We go, well, that's okay, because you know, we know the end of the story, and victory is coming. And of course, that's a really important part of our experience as Christians. Christians, but she says sometimes people live that Saturday, that Easter Saturday experience for a really long time. And being trauma informed, I think, means understanding Saturday and what that experience is like for people. So the last thing I want to ask you is, you know, you were talking about your own journey of recovery and feeling like you were pursuing some kind of calling to work with other women. And the question in my head was, so you're all fixed now. You're done with your own healing. Is that how this works? That we have to get all the way to the end of our own healing before we can offer support to others?
Listen, this is a human life. You know, we are all a work in progress. So no, I'm definitely not at the end of my journey. That said, I think it's, you know, when you go into this work, there is a level of responsibility to be at a certain stage of healing for sure, and to have your own support as needed, when needed. But no, I'm not done. I don't think I will ever be done, but I have a level of self-compassion and self-awareness that I did not have before all of this happened. And my relationship is healing in a way where I feel a level of connection with my husband that I never thought I would have as well. And to be able to share a relationship with the church is a true gift, and one I am grateful for every day.
Yeah. And such an encouraging story. Like I said, right at the very beginning, we hear, often we as practitioners hear the lowlights, we hear the horror stories, we hear the worst of the damage. Because you know what, if a person with an addiction or a betrayed partner goes to the church and they have a really great experience, we may never get to meet them. But we do get to meet the ones who go to church and get more damaged, more traumatized, feel blamed, feel judged, all of those things. And so it's really encouraging. And I think, you know, for those people listening who are in church communities, who, you know, we want to see people connecting with God through this experience. And what you've shared today really proves that that really is possible, and that it might be a bit more of a roundabout way to get there than you might imagine, right? It really sounds to me, as I sort of reflect on everything that you've shared, that actually we need to show up as Jesus before we even start telling you that that's what you need. Because I imagine that if you'd rocked up in our groups and started to tell your story, and we had said, well, you know, you just need Jesus, you just need to pray more, you just need to read more scripture, my guess is you would have not stayed with us very long.
Yeah, that, and you need to forgive. It's like, I can't get there yet, right? Yeah.
Right. And I don't know about you, I'm going to talk about forgiveness later in the conference. And one of the things that I shall definitely say is that my experience is that 90% of the partners that I've worked with, the spouses of men with problematic sexual behaviors, they want to forgive. They come looking for that. And actually often guilting themselves because they're not there yet, because they're still mad, they're still reeling, they're still all of the stuff. And so, you know, it's kind of a testament to that internal knowingness that they often come asking, can you help me to get to a place of forgiveness, right?
Yep. And I could say something about that, but I'm going to let you speak on that one. So,
well, it's been really wonderful. And as I said, I hope that those of you listening who are in church leadership and in pastoral positions in church, I hope that what you can take from this is some of the really practical stuff that Cindy's highlighted to support men and women. And I think, you know, a lot of the stuff that you've said, Cindy, crosses over to the other side as well. The person with the addiction needs people to not judge them. They need to feel safe. They need to feel like their experience can have purpose and meaning in the future ministry of the church. Maybe not all straight away, but at some point, right? And so absolutely. I think there are some really practical things to take out of what you've shared today that you guys listening as church leaders and pastoral people with pastoral oversight can really take away and apply and think about, well, what would it look like like if Cindy were sitting in my office telling me her story? How can I respond to that in a way that's helpful and meaningful, and eventually, as we've seen, draws you back to the heart of God, which is just a really encouraging thing to hear. So thanks again for sharing with us, Cindy.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And since this interview was recorded, Cindy's husband, Brian, has also begun working with Naked Truth Recovery, and he's coaching our Click to Kick professional groups and other men through our Whole Life Recovery program, and individually working with clients too. So Cindy and Brian have this really great story of how they're using their recovery to help others. And if you're interested in learning more about our programs, Wholehearted, which is our partner program, or any of our programs for men seeking healing and recovery, you can find all of that at nakedtruthproject.com under the Get Help menu.
This is the P Word podcast brought to you by Naked Truth Project. If you'd like to learn more about our work, please visit nakedtruthproject.com.